Hi, everyone. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Morley. My sober date is September 17th, 1978. And that's truly a miracle in my life and my family's life. I'm not a speaker. I'm a drunk by trade. And I'll do my very best to share, as the big book says, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. You want a little more? Yeah, that's important. Anyway, I'm very grateful to be here. As I said, I'll do my very best to do as the big book says. Just to sort of, before I start my story, I'm not a speaker, as I said. We had a drink up in Canada. It was called Block and Tackle. Take a drink, walk a block, and tackle anything. And I was pretty good at that. Also, we used to tell a little story up there, and this is Canadian stuff. You Americans don't have to buy into it. But this guy was real emotionally confused, and he talked to his doctor, and he said, well, I can refer you to a brain surgeon. They're doing brain transplants now. So he went down, and the guy said, well, you go over there to the clinic, and you can decide what you want to be. And we can do a transplant, and hopefully it'll be successful. So we get over there, and there was a case, and he said, well, what's this? And they said, that's the brain of a blue-collar truck driver kind of person, just normal labor. He said, how much is that? And they said, $500. He said, well, that one over in the next, oh, that's $1,000. That's the brain of a doctor, lawyer, upper-class people. He said, well, there's one way over there by itself. He said, oh my gosh, that's very expensive. That's the brain of an alcoholic. It's $5,000. It's never been used. And that's sort of the way I was. I came here as a little boy dressed in men's clothing, really, truly. I grew up in a loving family. Very, very little alcohol ever revealed. Church and Sunday school. Not a lot of money, but a great upbringing. Lots of love, shown, not told. We didn't ever exchange like my children and I do today. We have that AA open love. It's cool. But I knew the commandments, certainly knew right from wrong. I had three brothers and two sisters. I was the second oldest. And I believe I was different because I didn't like authority. I liked to be a show-off. Gave my parents a hard time, even as a... But I was a good boy, you know, I would work. I'd cut lawns, shovel snow, do whatever, make money, help my mom and daddy. You know, it wasn't all bad. But then as I grew up, I rebelled in school, got to where I didn't like anyone that wore a uniform. I don't know why. They were just superior to us poor folk, and I didn't like that. However, at about 13 or 14, I had my first drink on the riverbank of the cheapest Catawba you could buy, and some beer, and got vitally, vitally ill. I was hanging on the grass to keep from falling off the world, you know. I was really sick. And you know, as I got a few years down the road and got a driver's license, I I was always in trouble. Car accidents, rollovers, hospitals, and problems. And in those days, the police would even sometimes drive the car home and give the keys to my mother and not charge me. And people tried to help me. I was given many opportunities, but I don't know how many times I lost my license. I'm not proud of it, but probably 5 or 6 or 8 or who knows, a lot of times. Anyway, at 17, I got married. And I don't know what I was thinking. My school sweetheart was pregnant, and I was become a daddy at 18. At 21, I had 3 little kids, so I'd learned how to do something there. And I was drinking. I worked with older men. I got in the trucking business. My father was a truck driver and a great, fine gentleman. He was just a gentleman. He truly was. And then along came Morley, and I got involved with those older guys and got going to the hotel with the guys that drank, not including my daddy, that's for sure. He'd have a 6-pack of beer sit in the cellarway, and it might be a year old before it would be drank. 6-pack. And I can remember Mom and Dad having a few drinks at the house, a little Mickey, a little gin on a Saturday night, and play cards, and they'd giggle a little. So I knew what, alcohol was supposed to do. Relax you and have a little laugh. And that was, but I didn't know that there was a lot of police car rides and jail time and stuff that followed me in my path of destruction. When I drank, I had no conscience. I could do anything pretty much to anybody and not have a lot of guilt or shame or remorse. Sometimes, if I didn't know there were blackouts, I would fish around to see what had happened, because I wouldn't remember. Because it's a progressive disease, and I took, at about 21 or 22 years of age, I took a job transfer and thought, well, I'll get away from all these cronies and guys I went to school with, and I'll start a new life with my 3 little children. And I moved to Hamilton and driving truck. It wasn't long until I was different guys, but same kind of behaviors. And so I was a good provider. I always worked. I wasn't, I didn't end up on the streets. I would have eventually, I'm sure. But I always took pride in having new bicycles and tricycles for the kids and good clothes, and they went to church and Sunday school. It was instilled in me, and I wanted my children to have the best, but when I drank, I was a different guy. And I'd be good for a while, make good money and buy nice cars, and then I'd drink and everything, be the same, buy a nice suit of clothing, go out and get drunk, and I'd either burn on it or it would be the trash. The fighting and the blood and the nonsense. So I had this desire to drive truck long distance, and I got driving Toronto to Florida, which was in those days 2-lane highway. It was a big trip, and I was with much older men, and I got to not only drinking but doing other things, and it got very serious because it was progressive, and I would get very disoriented and things would happen. I was thinking yesterday, because I knew I was going to share with you tonight. I'll never forget, I loaded peaches one time in Georgia, down by Fort Valley somewhere. And I was thinking how wonderful this program it is. It gives us a direction. We have a map. We can read a map in sobriety. And I got loaded that night, and I was all drunked up and pilled up and pumped up, ready to go. And quite often, they'd pay us bonus money if we ran like in 20 hours out of Georgia into Toronto for the hot market supply. And I was gone about 3 hours, and I looked out the window of the truck, and I was going by the same place I started. I just gone around a great big circle. All I had to do was read the map or whatever. Anyhow, most of you people know the progression, and I could tell you horror stories about my life, but I'll try to just... I was good in business. I would work hard. A company back in my hometown made me an offer to go back and be part of management, and I accepted. My wages were cut in half. And we all talk about that little white house and the white picket fence. And I moved back home, and sure enough, the little white house, the black trim and the white picket fence and paved driveway, and I'd done so good. Gosh, I was good. I very seldom drank. Things were good. And I finally got a company car, expense account, sales manager job, and then you probably already know what happened. I got to drink and celebrate. And things, not overnight, but it progressed to where eventually I left that company. I abused the family terribly, and they were good to me. However, and I went selling trucks. All I knew was trucks. And, you know, I would be good and sell, get a big commission check, and then get drunk, upset the company car, disaster. We were in our, I don't know what I was then, 30s, 20s, late 20s, early 30s. And I can remember me getting those other salesmen that normally didn't behave that way. We'd all get booked in the same hotel. And we'd be in there drunk and having pillow fights and smashing TVs. And if I had a grandchild acting like that today, I would seek psychiatry help for him. But there we were, grown men. And I could take good people and make them crazy with me, you know. A lot of wives didn't like their husbands being around me. I was bad news. And it got to where my sisters and brothers, if my car arrived in their driveway, the lights went out. They didn't want me there. And my late daddy, on the day they laid him to rest, I was at the height of my addiction, and I remember sitting waiting for the liquor store to open that morning. Yeah, and no self-confidence. It just got worse and worse. You know, they say we don't have to ride the garbage truck all the way to the dump, and I'm grateful I didn't, because I'm here today, sober for quite a while, and I prefer to talk about my recovery, because to me, this is the promised land. We've arrived. We're all here tonight in the promised land. This is as good as it gets for an alcoholic, to have that serenity and peace, like the promises say. We'll know a new freedom and a new happiness. And it's so, so true. I have 9 grandchildren. Never seen grandpa drink. I have 5 great-grandchildren. I don't suspect they'll ever see me drink. I don't certainly intend. I've been through a lot of heartache, you know, and problems in sobriety, open heart surgery. Now I'm fighting this cancerous stuff. But you know, nothing can make me mad enough, sad enough, or glad enough to take a drink today. And my older brother, when I was first diagnosed with this removal of my kidney and stuff going on, and he's a bit of a drinker. Milton knows him. And he said, "Why don't you get a bottle and have a drink?" And I said, "My dream is to, when I leave here, to leave sober." And a lot of good things have happened in sobriety. Being here at Mount Eagle is because years ago they used to have a cruise without booze. It was advertised in the Grapevine, and I was fairly newly sober. And I called and made a connection, and I booked to go on this cruise. Never been on a cruise, been on lots of boats, I had boats. And I met Milton and Joanne out in the Atlantic in an AA meeting. And that's why I'm here today. I spent countless, many vacations, travel. Milton and Joanne's been up to visit me, all because of AA, all because of that cruise. And anyway, here's the end of the line for the drinking. I was working for some, I'd built a couple of businesses and destroyed them, just literally the one was a multi-million dollar business I had, and it all went because of this disease. Irrational thinking, irrational behavior, lawyer bills, was awful. And I used to even love to be in someone's office and grab a bunch of their business cards, and I'd be out drunk and giving out their business cards and saying, I'd park the truck when I was driving truck behind a bar, and I'd be in there saying, and somebody would be stupid enough to ask me what I'd done. I'd say I was an airline pilot, or I was air traffic controller. I was never, you know, and then I come up with that deal. I used to never say I was a truck driver. I'd say I'm a highway transportation engineer. And in a way, I was engineering things. But anyway, I got off those drugs and behaved and never went back to that way of life. But I had all this horror in my life and drama, and at 39, I woke up. I was working for some people I don't want to discuss. They were not good people to work for. I'd been carrying a gun for some time. I was totally filled with fear. Not so much of the unknown, fear of what was behind me, because I was doing a lot of things that I shouldn't do. And I had the mother of my children, my first wife, we had divorced, and I had gone, and I was living in a little room, and I met a girl, and she was a boozer, and we started to have a alcoholic relationship, and she had a little girl, and later in marriage, I adopted her little girl. But that was ruined before we ever married from the drinking, but I didn't know that at the time. But anyhow, I had dropped her off on a Friday while I went and done a job. And I woke up on that Sunday in my car in a strange city, and a lot, the worst of the worst of fear of the unknown, and just so tired of, because I was 39 and I'd had a mindset, live fast, love hard, die young, and my goal was to die at 40. Well, when you get to 39, you sometimes start to think a little differently. So I'd had that other life. So anyhow, the good news is I'd had an uncle come to this wonderful fellowship, and he had told me years ago about Alcoholics Anonymous. Just briefly, he said, if you ever want to, he always called me Joe. And he said, if you ever want help, AA's good. Then he went the church way and gave up AA and got drunk years later. But he did come back to AA, and he's sober today. He's a little old man now. And my other hero in life, my mother's youngest brother, see, they were my kind of people. We were fishermen. We fished on the riverbank with dynamite and wine. Like, just instant gratification. And then along with that went the car chase. And I was always the getaway driver. I always drove from the barroom brawls to the police. And I always was the getaway driver. But I woke up this Sunday morning. I love that song, Sunday Morning Coming Down. And I love Sundays. Sundays are special. That Sunday morning, I thought, oh my God, I've got to change. The only time I get in trouble is when I drink. If I don't drink, I'm okay. So, good news is, God intervened, I believe, right there in that car, because I had booze and I started to drink, but I knew that I was going to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I went and got Helen and her little girl and went home and got cleaned up a little bit and got the phone book open and called Alcoholics Anonymous. And a guy by the name of Earl S. asked me some funny questions, I thought. Was I okay, et cetera. See, I could come out of that fog after a while, and I'd be okay. And then I would try it again and again. I was always stopping, and I got 6 months a few times over the years. It was horrid. I knew I was going to drink again. I just didn't know when. But anyway, Earl came by that Sunday evening, picked me up, and took me to my first meeting. It was a discussion meeting. And I did not know. No one ever said to me, you're an alcoholic. No one. Not even a judge. But there was a moment of truth, and went around the room and in this discussion meeting, and it come to me. I said I was an alcoholic. And I meant it, and I accepted it. And God was there with me. Never drank again. Amazing. And I started recovery with a desire to build a business, to because I knew I had been successful, and I knew I could do it again, I guess. And I started a little company immediately after getting sober. A Jewish friend of mine, he was a rabbi. I named my youngest son after him. Great man. He gave me some money, helped me, he loved me. He was really my friend. And he thought that I maybe shouldn't drink, but he didn't like me going to meetings. We had meetings at the synagogue in Toronto. And he heard I was in there. And I was even sober, the kind of guy that had to get a skull cap. And when I'd be in my office making it a big deal and excited, I'd put on my skull cap. Because I had a lot of fun with Jewish people. Very. I made a lot of money with Jewish people. They were good to me. They were my friends. But anyway, I started this little business. Thanks to Sheldon helping me. I paid him back every dollar. But, the good news is, We would sell ourselves short. I built a wonderful business, made some money, kept some money. I got money left for my children and grandchildren. You know, I'll never spend my money. Miracles, just truly. And I really, my business was first, but AA was there. You know, I loved the fellowship and I loved the people I met. I met some great people that motivated me. The only way up was the steps. The elevator was out of order. And you got to give time. Don't have to do it today. Just stay in attendance. The miracle will happen. And it truly, truly did in my life. Probably some things I'd done wrong, but I didn't drink. And I always went to meetings. I'll tell you one little story. I was in the trucking 2 or 3 years, and there was some guys at an AA meeting on a Saturday night in Bolton, north of Toronto, and they were talking about a guy, and they said, he'll never get sober. He's a lost cause. He'll never. And his family had called for someone to go, and they were declining. And I was at that place, and I said, who is it? Where is he? And I went, and his son answered the door. And I just got my first new sober Cadillac, and he lived down a gravel road, and I didn't want to go down that gravel road, but I went. And he had passed out, but his son said he would tell him that AA had come. And on the Monday, I was in my office, and I don't know why. I believe everything's God-inspired. I called him. And he knew of me, not through knowing me. He knew of me. And he said, would you come and talk to me? And I did. His name was Ross. And in those days, we used to travel 30, 40, 50 miles between meetings. They weren't like today in greater Birmingham or Toronto or Atlanta. And we'd load up a car full, everybody in there smoking, wind is up, frosted over in the wintertime, when we didn't suffocate. But you know, I stayed sober and got active, started a group, done some things, and I got to finish the Ross story. Milton and Joanne's met Ross. He had to go to Europe, and he was about a year sober. And his late mom and dad both said to me, if he comes back, he'll come back drunk. And I had married my second wife, and I said, and I had some employees already, and things were going good. I had a brother working with me. And I said, could I go with Ross? I don't want to see him get drunk. And she agreed, so off to Europe I go with Ross. And he had a trade fair in Paris, just outside Versailles. And then he had to go to Italy and Germany, and I traveled around with him. And he stayed sober, and I booked us a little side weekend trip to Spain. And we were over in Costa del Sol there, whatever you call it. And he said, how can I ever repay you? And I said, well, help another alcoholic. He said, no, but how can I pay you? I said, just don't worry about it. I'm seeing the world, you know, like, just don't worry about it. And he said, I'm going to do something for you. He said, you got all those trucks and no business. Because, see, a lot of people didn't trust me to come back and patronize me. It was a slow road back to recovery and business. And he called me a couple of weeks later. We were like brothers. We were really joined at the hip. And we helped a lot of people. We worked hard in this fellowship. And I get a call from Ross, and he said, Molson Breweries are going to call you. Ross was in the booze business, by the way. He said, you're going to get a call from Molson. And oh my, that's like a dream for a guy coming off where I was coming from. I was hauling cow hides and batteries and junk freight. And sure enough, they called and asked me to come to a meeting. And I dressed up and showed up. I'm sure I didn't read in those days how it works. I recited it. And I would sit in the car before I went into a business meeting and recite it. Because I was filled with fear of drink. And I went in. And they said, we're ready to start shipping beer to the United States. And we've heard some good things about you. And I didn't have many trucks, but I was pretty aggressive, and I could obtain stuff. And I had some people who really liked me being sober. GMAC, General Motors Accept and Say, that I owed them several million dollars. And they knew I was sober, and they liked me. And anyhow, I was to become the major beer carrier out of Canada to America. And there I was. Molson lettered my trucks. It's really, and the old timers in AA said, you can't do that, you'll get drunk. And I would go to the brewery and load the trailers, and on a Saturday there'd be 20, 30 loads in the yard, and I called it Wobbly Pop. I didn't even call it beer. It wasn't for me to drink, it was for me to truck. And anyway, that was a great, great opportunity for me and my family, because I had my oldest son with me. He finally got confidence and came to work for me as my mechanic. My grandson came on board. I had two brothers there, two sisters involved. It was a family business. This program is so awesome. And good things happen. They say to good people, but I believe, well, I know I'm a good guy sober. Give me one spark of whiskey and I'm a different cat. Because anyway, what I'm saying is we can do anything in Alcoholics Anonymous if we stay sober and are realistic. The one thing I like to say in this microwave era, we want everything now. And we got to give time. An old timer at a meeting, I've been so blessed, I travel a lot. Like John was kidding about, where do I live? Well, I live in Brockville, Ontario, but I love my AA tour bus, because the personalized plate in my bus is AA tour, and the Hummer I tow behind is Tour AA. And my business card in retirement says Tour AA. Because it's just a trip, you know. And I ride around and around. This old timer told me, if you come to Alcoholics Anonymous and your life gets better, you're an alcoholic. So there's no qualms about whether I am. And I believe in happy sobriety. I truly do. If we're going to be sober, we should try to get happy and enjoy the ride. It's, you know, it's truly a trip. It's unbelievable. Imagine those little grandbabies of mine. And yet, the problems I had before. See, I didn't know I could dance soberly. I didn't know I could ride in a boat soberly. I never drove a race car. I used to be a race car driver. I never drove soberly. I didn't know I could do anything soberly, so I had to be taught, you know. And like they say, when the student's ready, the teacher will appear. And it's so true. It's so, so true. Because those old timers I met, they were so good to me, and they told me just what I needed to hear. And you know, we used to say in sobriety, I'm not the man I want to be, I'm not the man I ought to be, but by the grace of God, I'm not the man I used to be. And that's progress, not perfection. You know, we're not going to graduate from this thing, but we certainly have. So I have countless friends all over America. I love America. I do my 6 months and 6 months. Don't want to trade places. I don't want anyone else's sobriety. I don't want anyone else's wife today. I don't want anybody else's anything. I'm just happy with morally, you know. Even with my health and whatever, it's okay. Because I was telling Marion before, I was dead at 40 if I had kept drinking. So it's truly, truly a blessing. I don't know. I could go on all night about recovery. I like to tell little things like after my cancer stuff was cleared up a little bit, I said to my daughter, she took the time off work to see me through my recovery, and her name's Tammy. And I said, "Tammy, have you got a couple of weeks vacation?" And she said, "Yeah," because she works for the Canadian government, so she's got vacation. I tease her, they're always on vacation. But anyway, I was already in gear looking, and I'd always wanted to go to Scotland and Ireland because my ancestors were from there. So we, my daughter and I, we flew to London and boarded the ship in Southampton, and we done Wales, Scotland, Ireland, many ports, France, and then back to England. And she'd never been across the pond, and we had an awesome, awesome trip. And see, my old thinking would have been take some flamboyant woman and be in a big Donnybrook halfways there and all kinds of turmoil. So I've been able to do a lot of things. My sons do NASCAR races with me. And see, I didn't even know I could go to a race soberly. Didn't know anything when I came. The former owner of Atlanta and Darlington, South Carolina Speedways, his wife was one of us, and his name was Mr. DeWitt. And this is way back in history. And they were the only two tracks that had non-alcohol seating. And I went to Atlanta for years and didn't have to sit with the drunks and hear all that BS and beer spilled on me. And that now, I, after years, I can go anywhere, anytime. But like the guy said early in sobriety, if you must attend a party, we suggest morally you go late and leave early. And I used to go early and leave late. So, but it's just a marvelous gift, and I cannot say enough about the unmerited gifts in my life, mostly my family. My late mother was had 23 years of sobriety with me, and she went to every medallion. She was proud of her son, and I was only what she raised me to be when I got sober. That's all I was. She used to come down to my houses in Florida. I had a couple of homes on the beach. And she'd come down there and ride around the convertible. She didn't have to hire lawyers no more. She didn't have to go to the hospital to see me. She didn't have to worry about me getting out of jail. Hey, gave it all. So anybody new or nearly new or thinking about drinking, you could never, ever, ever do that successfully again. And why? Why try? This is the promised land. And I thank everybody in Alcoholics Anonymous for my sobriety. And I love you all. Thank you.